Welcome to this class on helping talented Tim. We heard this morning that small talk is important, so I know I have not met all of you individually. I'll tell you just a little bit about myself. Welcome. There's handouts here on the back. There's handouts on the back bench. My name is Edwin Bontrager, and I've taught for a number of years at opposing corners of the country in Oregon and then diagonally in Florida. And if there's any of you that are teaching away from home, I can assure you that it can be a good experience, especially if it's your first year. Some of my best memories are from teaching in Florida, which has an opposite climate from Oregon. Currently teaching in Estacada. Also, some of you, we hear people talk about pulling their hair out and maybe associating that with teaching school. And I just want to put you at ease. This situation up here is not a result of teaching school. It's a deeper problem. It's in my genes. So don't worry about losing hair teaching school. I'm also curious, is there anyone here who has taught more than 5 years? Kind of curious what experience I have here. Okay, how many have you taught?
10.
Okay, very good. Any 3 to 4 year teachers? Okay. Any first year teachers? All right. So we all have some experience, it looks like. This is going to be more than a workshop on dealing with spare time. That's something we will talk about because it's important with the subject, but I think our goal should be higher than just keeping our students busy, right? Also, my experience in teaching is more with upper graders, so that's the experience that you're going to see coming out here. But I think there's principles that will apply across the board if there's younger teachers, younger grade teachers here. It's my thesis that talented Tim's enjoyment in school and his usefulness in God's kingdom will depend on how much he is challenged to grow and develop in school. We're going to discuss the following. First of all, who is talented Tim? What does he look like? Secondly, we're going to discuss what it means to be talented and relate that to Christ's kingdom. We're also going to talk about life principles that relate to talented Tim's success. And finally, your plan for Tim. So let's get started. First point is Tim and his talents. So I'm assuming you're here because you either anticipate this type of situation in your class or you have some experience. Who is talented Tim in brief? These students in our classrooms that we consider talented, how do you know that? Very simple. Perhaps it was you in school. Okay, they're done early. All right, that's one. Anything else?
It differs from the sloppy worker in that often there's nothing you can make them go back and fix. They'll often get really good grades and the penmanship will be fine.
Okay.
Done.
Okay, we'll talk about that a little bit more. Yes.
In spite of their speed, they get great scores.
Okay. Good scores in spite of their speed. Anything else? Uh-huh. All right. They get done. They have so much spare time that they end up actually becoming lazy, which seems like a conundrum for a talented person. Okay. So they don't require much class time. Some of them prefer to self-study. They'd rather not sit in on a class. They want to get done and read a book, whatever. So does that equal talented? Getting done soon? We want to expand this a bit more. We're still talking about Tim and his talents, but let's talk about what is the truth about talents now. And I'll point you to the quote on the board. Before we fill in the blanks, are any of you familiar with that? Our opportunities to do something are our something. Okay, we'll come back to it. So, to be talented is having a natural bent or ability to do something well. But I'm going to argue that it is more than that. If we stop with that, I don't think we're going to have people that fit well into Christ's kingdom. What is God's expectation? When Jesus talked about talents, we had the person with one, the person with two, and the person with five, was it? What were they expected to do?
Use what they have.
Use it. And
grow it,
yes. So there was supposed to be fruit. Talents used selfishly are obnoxious. Talents used selflessly become a tremendous blessing to God's kingdom, and that's what we want, right? We want more than smart, smug high schoolers who graduated with ease, with flying colors, and didn't have to work very hard to get there, but think that they are really have really accomplished something. We want more than that. But what do we want? What do we want? What is a person who views their talents in a healthy way? Can you give me some words to describe a person like that?
Courteous.
Okay. Maybe courteous, especially when interacting with a person who doesn't have the gifts, especially sensitive to that. So courteous. Anything else?
Humble.
All right. Very important.
I know we're talking about children, but yesterday, poor in spirit was mentioned. I think that's key.
All right. Poor in spirit. Okay. Thank you. So we want, the kingdom of God needs people who serve the Lord with a humble awareness of their talents. And that's probably a whole nother subject. Do you have talents? Would you be willing to tell me what they are? It's important that our students and that we have a humble awareness of what our talents are, and then are willing to use those, actually willing, not in pride, but God has given this to me, how can I bless His kingdom with this? So when your students serve, service to others, be quick to compliment that, more than so quick to compliment their handwriting, that needs to be complimented too. But when they serve others, it's very important for us to compliment that attitude of service. Tell them you notice and tell them it makes a difference. All right. Furthermore, we need young people who are willing to grow their gifts in their springtime years. I am at the summertime of life. I'm married. I have two children. I am working at capacity, and I don't have much room to go study more, to do a lot of reading. For me, growth happened more in my springtime years. So we need to push them to grow that before they get busy with the summer fruit-bearing time of life. Let's go on to who is talented, Tim, in depth. So, in brief, he is the person who gets done quickly, doesn't need a lot of help from the teacher, and pulls good grades. In depth, Mrs. Reed over here mentioned that sometimes they're lazy. What are some other things that can happen to those students who, especially in their older years of school, have breezed through?
One thing that can happen is they don't have to study, where they get it into their head for so long, and then as soon as they're done with the lesson, they forget it.
Okay. All right. So studying comes so easily that the information parks itself there, they can pull it up for the test, and then they forget it. Is that what you're saying?
That's the way I work.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right, that's interesting. We probably also see students who it doesn't require much exposure, and they get it and it sticks too, right? Some of the talented ones would be that way. What else? Okay. Uh-huh. All right. That's one I hadn't thought about too much, but a younger grade teacher, which I'm assuming you...
Middle.
Okay. So the ones who have it, you're saying that the ones who have it easy in grades 1 through 3, 1 through 4, once they get into concepts that are more abstract, it's a little harder. Okay. So good for them to be stretched in their younger years. Anything else?
Uh-huh. Or story problems, we have a specific number of steps in algebra problems for us to do, and we'll just drop random steps.
Okay, so they...
So like they're just doing it mentally without writing it on paper, which is detrimental when you start to get to things where you can't suddenly, but it is, you know, it's something you just have to keep on top of.
Sure.
But it is something that I run into with a few of my...
So they appreciate speed because that's pretty much all they've known. They want to skip steps then. All right. Any of you ever notice that some of these students do actually have some blind spots or ignorance that perhaps they have fed their interests and some other things are... How do you pronounce this word? Kernel, yes. Me, and I'm not trying to say that I'm super talented, but I think it was my third year of teaching. I was reading story to my students, and I pronounced this colonel, and I received a fax that afternoon from one of my 10th graders informing me how to pronounce that word. I was a student who basically breezed through. I wouldn't say school was super easy, but it was not difficult, and I don't think I was challenged as much as I should have been. I would consider myself a student who pulled 92s when I could have been pulling 98s without too much more effort. So the laziness thing. Anything else before we move on? As far as talented Tim in depth. There's one more.
I might have took mine. A lot of them are more bored with life than what they're not interested in life because they get things so quickly. But
sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
And some of them have really come alive and have been challenged.
Mm-hmm.
They have to work hard.
Okay. So the one that was mentioned here was being kind of bored with life, uninterested. We're going to come back to that. That's a good one. I also thought about blind spots socially. Any of you relate to that? Blind spots socially, especially in relating to students who are not like them, students who struggle, maybe having a bit of a superior attitude. Oh, you have homework again today. Yeah, I thought you probably would. That sort of attitude. That's something we want to watch for and catch those kinds of things. All right, let's go on to point number 2, which would be life principles for Tim's success. Life principles for Tim's success. We're going to look at 2 of them. The first one is that Tim's success and interest, I'm sorry, Tim's interest and continued growth will be the result of him having to work hard and be stretched to achieve a goal. Tim's interest and continued growth will be the result of his having to work hard and be stretched to achieve a goal. God has ordained for everyone, regardless of their number of talents, that joy itself lies at the end of a pathway of effort. Joy lies at the end of a pathway of effort. Ask a good businessman, someone with healthy friendships, or a mountain climber, they'll tell you the satisfaction comes at the end of a pathway of effort. It will be the same for the talented students. And I think that joy in our work is very closely related to us having to work hard. It's just simply that way. You think of a softball game. Who gets a rush out of a home run? Raise your hand if your heart's beating when you're running from third to home base. Of course. What if it was easy? What if with minimal effort you could get a home run virtually every time? Would you continue to have that rush to enjoy softball? No. And on a sidebar here, it's the same way, except the opposite, for the students who struggle. If they can basically never get from home to first, they will lose interest after a while. So there's that balance we have to think about with our faster students and our slower ones. I want you to picture it this way. So, here's the individual. Here is their circle of knowledge and experience. This is what they've learned, what they've experienced so far in life, and specifically in the school context. This is where their talent, their ability could take them if they are willing to, and if you as a teacher push them and lead them to that point. So I'm going to suggest to you that whether the student is slower academically or extremely fast, if we don't keep them here at the edge of the circle and keep that circle growing, they will lose interest. Now, living within the experience they've had would be the drill, the review, and that is important. That's very important to continue to be immersed in what we've already learned. But unless there is activity at the edge, all of us will lose interest. So keep that in mind. All right. So, first principle, Tim's interest and continued growth will be the result of his having to work hard and be stretched to achieve a goal. Second one, very closely related, talents themselves need to be grown and developed. Talents themselves need to be grown and developed. You see, a talent is like a seed. The gifts, the things that you are good at were seeds that God gave to you, planted. They need to be grown just like a plant. No one is born with the gift for writing music or the gift for writing with words. They might have a bent that direction, but that plant needs to be grown, needs to be watered. So it is a deception to think that someone is simply naturally a pro at something. If an adult is good at something, very likely there's been a pathway of effort that has included some failure up to that point. And failure comes by getting outside our comfort zone, and failure is a good thing. Of course, there's ditches there, but I think you understand what I'm talking about. All right. So based on these two principles, I'll review them one more time. Tim's interest and continued growth will be the result of his having to work hard and be stretched to achieve a goal. And secondly, talents themselves need to be developed. Based on those two principles, let's go on to some practical ways to help Tim. Is there anything you would like to bring up at this point? Perhaps comments on what I've shared or a question? Something I failed to share. I want to go back just a bit on this thing about the way we view talent. And what I shared about that it's a deception to think that somebody is just good at that and they haven't really had to work to get there. I think we need to be careful with that. And I enjoy music. I've written some music. And if there's one thing I can tell you, it is hard work to do it right. It is hard work. And sometimes we think of people like Ira D. Sankey or Fanny Crosby and read the stories about them. Mr. Sankey, at the end of, was D.L. Moody's revival meetings, I think. Wasn't it at the end of one of those where he sat down to play on the organ or piano the invitation? And how was it? He was given the words to the 90 and 9. You familiar with that song? He was given the words, I believe, and he basically sat down and on the spot, composed, played a melody and then played it again with harmony or something like that. And we think, wow, he was, you know, that is really something. And then there's stories about Fanny Crosby having an inspiration and she wrote this poem within 5 minutes or something. I'm not wanting to discredit those, but simply to remind us that very likely they had spent a lot of work developing that talent. And also, some of those things that are very good are fruit that's worth feasting on in God's kingdom aren't necessarily meat and potatoes either. It might be a little more on the spice side of things, perhaps not quite as deep or well-developed. But just keep in mind that talent needs to be developed, and it will take work to get there.
I did have one question. I could not remember what you asked, but so if you have a student that is talented, Tim, and he gets all his work done, and he's not interested in the grade work that he has because he's actually beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say he what actually interests him would be like the 10th grade stuff, when he's back in 8th grade. How do you work with that? Because in the school system, he's supposed to go through every single grade and get all the work done, but he's actually already knows all that stuff, and it's just boring. How do you keep them interested?
Okay, so the question is, yes, we will. The question is, how can we keep students interested? What do we do with students who are, for example, working at an 8th grade level, and they're ready for or interested in the Algebra 1, the 10th grade stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, we will get to that in a bit here. Anything else? All right, let's move on. Point 3, practical ways to help Tim. So I've divided this into two parts. First, the basics, and then second, beyond the basics. So let's talk about the basics. This is the most common scenario I think that we will encounter, and that is a student who is frequently done with their work early and they have spare time. How do we handle that? I think this is important because most of the time, what's your name? Everett? Everett? The situation you pointed out I think is going to be somewhat exceptional. Raise your hand if you have exposure to students that Everett is talking about. Just curious how much of that. Okay, not terribly uncommon, but anyway. So, first of all, the basics. For Tim, what are the basics for a student who frequently has spare time, not the ones who are interested in being two grades ahead and are generally done by lunchtime, what are the basics that we ought to have covered with them? I have down some, but I'd like to hear from you. What are some basics before we say, hey, we should, you know, maybe introduce a new subject for this student? Okay, make sure what they've done is done right. So what are some things that they have done? What are some things we should be checking on to make sure they are done right? Handwriting. Neat handwriting, yes. And I want to encourage younger grade teachers especially to really work on that, because they will receive it so much more easily than a 10th grader will. In fact, I would say you're never beyond hope, but it is really difficult to make a 10th grader improve their handwriting. All right, so good penmanship. What else? Making sure what they've done is done right. Was it you that mentioned skipping steps and sometimes skipping work? I have had gifted students completely miss problems on their tests. And I think, what were you thinking? You have time to do this test. But they're used to speed. I don't know what all is going on in their head. But so working on them with penmanship, with making sure they have completed their work, believe it or not, making sure that their work is thorough, complete sentences. Anything else? Okay, following the directions. That's another one. Can you relate to that? Oh, isn't that something? I had something humorous happen this past year. I had two students in the upper grades who were taking a teaching course from CLE. They want to be teachers. They're excited about it. And so they were doing some hands-on teaching, and one of them was having trouble with, she was teaching a fourth grade math class. She was having trouble with the student doing that very thing, skipping over work, not getting it done. And I had a class with these two teachers to be about once every 2 weeks, just to talk to them about it, coach them, whatever. And one of the days we had class, I had just checked, I think it was a test or some of their work, I don't remember, the day before, and both of these young ladies had skipped some work. And so that was a good teaching moment for them in, you know, teaching their students to complete their work. Something else you could do if the student is good at math, is breezing through math, and they're an older grader and you're allowing them to use calculator, pull the calculator and make them sweat a little bit more. They can handle it, and that is what will stretch and help develop that talent in math. Anything else coming to your mind that are basics we should have covered? We've talked about penmanship, making sure their work is completed and thorough. Okay, and that ensures accuracy, doesn't it? Sometimes when we speed through things, we forget the details. We think we have it right. So the thing that was mentioned here is having students write the paragraph number where they found the answer to ensure accuracy and just the discipline of going back and finding it. All right, good. Anything else for basics?
I mean, one thing that has helped me a lot, I teach the middle grade, and yeah, someone just kind of speed through it, and they were like on task, they even missed like how many questions on the test and stuff, and I was kind of like, I got this idea from somebody else that write on the board, like all objections, and did you follow objections, and did you complete your lesson, and then they had to put a check mark, and they had to circle the check mark, and so every lesson they were not allowed to hand it in, so they put the check mark, but they looked through the entire thing, and I thought that helped me tremendously.
Okay.
Sure.
Thank you. So the point that was mentioned here is having a checklist for them. Did I complete my work? And there was another one. Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Did I follow directions? Did I complete my work? You have to check that off before you hand it in. Thank you. All right. What about for Tim's teacher? What are some basics for you? I would say for an inexperienced teacher, one of the things you should evaluate is your schedule. Is your schedule creating the illusion of fast students? In other words, do you have your work scheduled in an imbalanced way where one day students have a lot of work and the next day they don't have much and they're finishing early and you're wondering why are they getting done early? So that is a basics one for we teachers. Is my schedule balanced? Is that working okay? Secondly, is do you have a spare time plan? And on the back of your handout, you'll notice a spare time template. This is what I use. This is just an idea. You're welcome to glean from it. So in my rules and procedures for my class, I have this written, that students, you have spare time if today's and yesterday's assignments are done, if you're up to date in your scoring, especially CLE type situations where they are scoring their own work, if you've said or written your Bible memory. My Bible memory program requires them to say it and to write it a couple times a week. If you've studied your spelling words or notes at least 10 minutes, if you're having them take notes in science class, history class, they can use up spare time studying because that is to prepare them for a test, those notes they take. And if your desk is organized and nothing on the floor around it, and if you have no corrections to finish. So, some things in place, a checklist in place, before you have spare time, do you have some basics for them to cover? Are there any you'd like to add to this or things that have worked for you? All right, let's move on to a spare time template then. So you are not having to come up with something for them to do on the fly. I have somewhat of a schedule. On Friday, my students may read a good book. I consider that important, that they have some time to read. So if it's Friday and you have spare time, this is what you're allowed to do. Any day, you're allowed to help a teacher in the school one time per week. And then by the month, I've had some projects. I had a church hymnal project. I won't take time to describe that now. The second month was discover and share. Pull the encyclopedia, pull a book, discover something, and then I will put you on the schedule to share that with a class on such and such a day. Gives them some public speaking opportunities, and it also is going to educate the rest of the class. The third month was Bible study. I'll talk just a little bit more about that later. Any spare time template stuff that you want to, that you have used, that you would like the rest to know? All right. I would suggest that this will cover most of the common situations where you have a student who's fairly fast, finishing their work somewhat early, if you're covering the basics and you have a good spare time plan in place, I think that's going to take care of a lot of that. Let's go on and talk about beyond the basics. This would be a student who has the basics covered and still is pulling good grades, finishing perhaps by lunchtime, and is having a lot of spare time. What should we do in these cases? What are your thoughts right off? What have you done, or what do you think ought to be done? All right, well, I think that one of the first things you should do is have a conversation with the parents so that they are aware of this. Most likely they are already, but you need to pull them in and get some suggestions, and also perhaps with the board. I think it's good for the board to know if there is a student who is wanting to do 10th grade work, and they could be, that's a conversation that you should get some input beyond just your own perspective. So talk to the parents, figure out what the parents' goals are. What do they want for that child? Do they want them to breeze on through? What would they like? How would they like their child to be stretched? Some other things you should be noticing are, what are that child's natural abilities? What is their natural bent? Do they have a particular love, a particular subject they enjoy? Do they have an obvious future interest? Do they want to be an electrician? Are they wanting to be a nurse for CAM? This will open some doors, I promise you, if you communicate with parents and board about the situation, lay it out and ask them what they would like their child, where they would like their child to go. That will open some doors, and I think that's very important to be done soon so that you don't go 6 months through the school year in frustration and finally figure something out for the last 3 months. All right. Beyond that, consider adding a subject. And this is something you should talk about with the parent. I have done this. I had a student who took an elective class from CLE and just did it on his own. I wasn't heavily involved. But he had that to do, and he was interested in that, and it filled up his time. He was learning a life skill. Consider adding a subject. There's been other students at our school who have taken Algebra 2. We only go through Algebra 1. There's been, I think maybe that same student took a physics course from Abeka, which we don't offer as a school. So there are definitely options. I have, it's kind of a little joke. How many of you have heard of the 5x5 scripture study method? A daily Bible study method. You read a chapter, you write down 5 questions from the chapter, you write down 5 statements of fact or truth from the same chapter. Thirdly, or Wednesday perhaps, 5 exhortations that I need. Thursday, 5 things for which I thank God from the chapter. And fifthly, or Friday, 5 key words from the chapter. I had a student who had a lot of spare time. He was 16, I think, and it was his first year in my class, and we were still getting our feet under us as to, he had some learning handicaps. Anyway, well, he was behind, put it that way. He came to school behind. Very bright student for the most part. Anyway, I had him do a lot of 5x5s, and he got tired of them. And so we had this little joke that, if I have spare time, Brother Edwin's going to make me do a 5x5. But nonetheless, it is a valuable tool and something that really increases their analytical skills and interest in God's Word, if not done too much. All right? Some of our students hope to be teachers. There are teaching courses. There's a teaching course available from CLE. That's an option. I think writing assignments are important, and I would not suggest throwing research papers at them very often as a spare time filler. Definitely wouldn't throw that out. But small things like writing poetry, writing paragraphs, writing a note of appreciation to perhaps one of their ministers or their parents, a fellow student, reaching out to other people, that attitude of service. And also summarizing. My dad talks about, he was in public school in high school, I believe, or from seventh grade on. He talks about being made to do summaries all the time by, I think maybe it was his seventh grade teacher, and he did not like that. But now he appreciates that, and I would have to say one of my dad's strong points is being able to look at a passage of writing or scripture and just put it into a sentence. And that's an extremely important skill, not just in looking at literature and pulling out the main idea, but looking at life. And okay, so you probably heard neuroscientists say the brain is a muscle, speaking in metaphor, but it needs to be grown, and it can be grown. All right, so consider adding a subject. I've given you options for things to add. Another one would be music assignments, analyzing a song by evaluating the poetry, summarizing the content, researching the lyricist and composer, and perhaps writing an alternate melody. You might not think students are gifted with music, but ask them to write a melody, and most of them can come up with a tune for something in their head. And for some of them, that opens up a door that they didn't realize they enjoyed that, when you allow them to be creative with something unusual like that. All right. Give purpose and direction then to these extra assignments. The student should not have the impression that this is a filler. All right, I'm in school, I'm breezing through my work, and this stuff is dumped on me. They should know that this is to stretch them, and this has a target we're shooting at. How can you do that? Well, one way you can do it is create a schedule for the extra assignment. Obviously, if it's a subject, then it has its own schedule. But if you are giving them extra stuff, you know, do summarizing for a month, and they know that the next month it's going to change. So you can give purpose and direction by creating a schedule. A second way is to have them share it with the class. In my teaching, I will have students share their writing assignments. I'll have them put them in the church mailboxes so the whole church next Sunday gets to read this along with the Sunday school papers. Also, utilize sharing it with the class. Get them up in front at the pulpit or the stand in your class. Introduce them, so-and-so is in such-and-such a grade, and they have researched this, and we're going to give them opportunity to share it now. And then they come up, and they have to talk to the class. That's an extremely good exercise for them. So sharing it with other people. A third one would be to put it on the wall. Any ideas from you on how to give extra assignments purpose and direction?
I think the end game, I mean, having goals is super important. But you said, like, people hate to do something without a definite goal in mind.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Busy work is that a point? That's why we're here. Mm-hmm.
So even though the student may growl around about having to do something extra, they are going to get joy out of that, and especially if they know that this has a shelf life, I'm going to do this for a while, and then I'm going to move on to something else. Okay, let's go on and conclude this. Here we go. All talent needs to be stretched and... Anyone want to give a shot at the second word?
Grown.
Grown, developed. That's what I have. All talent needs to be stretched and developed. And as I told you before, hard work and vacations from our comfort zone have a purging, humbling, and growing effect on our talents. Don't be dazzled by a student who excels. Life gives no one free passes. If you don't stretch them in school, they're probably going to struggle once they get out and start knocking their head against some realities outside the classroom. Okay? Secondly, joy, hard work, and service are related to each other. If you take hard work out, you can still have joy and service, but probably service to others is pretty much always hard work, isn't it? If the task itself is not hard, you're going to have a battle with your flesh, likely, and serving. Okay, so we need to include these components if we expect joy, and the two components are hard work and service to others. An unhappy student is a student... A student who seems to be losing interest might be working too hard or not hard enough. Yes. And then lastly, your essentials as a teacher for Tim are going to be, number one, a spare time plan. Number two, the parents' ideas. And number three, a plan that stretches the student and gives them a sense of direction. And finally, this quote by C. Mather, our opportunities to do good are our talents. Our opportunities to do good are our talents. That really brings the gift back to a service mentality. All right, this concludes Helping Talented Tim. Thank you for your attention.